Tonight I'd like to speak about awareness and presence, the practice of awareness and presence. Leonard Cohen said that if you don't become the ocean, you'll be seasick every day. And it can be life like that sometimes, perhaps most of the time, right? That we're pushed and pulled by our experience. We feel fragmented and can be quite overwhelming, just the experiences from being young, being small, and then we grow up and we may have the feeling like we're sort of just about catching up with ourselves, and then all sort of unexpected things happen in life, as they do. People we love die. It's a wonderful and terrible place, this earth. It really is. It's a lot for our heart and these tender skinned bodies that we have to handle and to remain open and available in life. So in practice, we're invited, a retreat is an invitation to turn to experience, to feel more, to be more of ourselves. But that also means that we rub up, we come close up against all the challenges. Can be outer challenges, but mostly it's inner challenges and inner complications. Did anyone feel restless today? Or a bit bored, or sleepy, agitated, annoyed? Physical pain. We sometimes have the idea that, okay, I practice meditation, I should only get over this knee pain, then it can all start. It's enormously challenging just to have a small discomfort, relatively small discomfort, like a pain in the knee or an itch somewhere, or being too warm or too cold. It's actually really hard for us. It affects us emotionally, and it starts up our whole thinking and our capacity to associate. That's a huge impact. We tend to put it down and say, well, I should handle that. I should be able to handle that. But it's a lot for us, for our being. Awareness or presence, I'll use these words a little bit interchangeably tonight, although they can be made more distinct. It's not just a kind of mind thing, like a concept that we use, or some kind of thinking function, like thinking in a certain way, having a certain attitude. It's actually much more robust, much more palpable. The felt sense of awareness is as important as sunlight is to us. Makes a difference if we look out in the morning and it's cloudy and gray, or if the sky is open. The nature of awareness is the capacity to be open and clear, not just in the head, but there too, but also in the heart, in the belly. In Arabic, particularly in the Sufi tradition, the word for presence also means touch, to touch. It's something very, very intimate, something very, very intimate. In Swedish, we use the word närvaro, which means close to beingness, close to being. And with awareness always comes a wider perspective or understanding. That's why the practice of awareness invites the natural growing of wisdom, a spontaneous, kind of organic wisdom. we shift our perspective. When we're overwhelmed, when we're fragmented, when we're pushed and pulled by our likes and our dislikes, we come to the lake and say, oh, the lake is beautiful, but oh, the road and the cars, that's not nice, why did they build it there? Likes and dislikes, pleasure, pain. We feel like somebody, we feel like nobody. We get praised, we get blamed. These winds of the world that push us and pull us. So how can the practice of awareness, the steadying of awareness, end this fragmentation? Make us more whole. I sometimes have this longing for the wild, the north, just to go to the mountains, to the untouched and the pristine, just to be alone in the silence and the unfabricated, the unbuilt spaces. Do you have that longing sometime? We have a word for it in Swedish. I don't know if you have it. What did you say, Minna? Not lappinkulta, that's something else. I know, I mean, it's done in the north, but... Lappikullos. Lappikullos, okay. So the longing for Lapland. Yeah. So we can have this longing for the open spaces. We love clear water, clear skies, right? And coming to a retreat, we can have a similar longing. There's a kind of calling from the heart that says, oh, space, peace, presence. We want a full life, full, simple, open, natural, wild. It seems like a good idea at a distance, and then perhaps at the end of this day, you're thinking, what on earth was I thinking? How does it come together? So it sounds like a good idea, retreat. And then when the rubber hits the road, it's just a lot of hindrances, and it seems like all that we can see, perhaps, is all this fragmentation, and the tensions, and the mind that's so busy and goes all over the place. I sometimes take my children walking, and so if I ask them, should we walk up a mountain, sometimes they say, yeah, let's do it, when they're not at the foot of it exactly. Maybe if they were given the chance of 6 hours of playing computer games on a mountain, I'm not exactly sure what they would choose, but so if I ask them, do you want to go up a mountain? And then they'll say, yeah. And so hiking boots on and walking sticks in hand, there we are. During Easter, we went up in the Alps, a little peak called Leonardstein, south of Germany. And so we started walking, and after about 50 meters, my daughter, who's 6 years old, said, I'm thirsty. Okay, first water break. Then 100 meters, my son, 11 years old. Are we there yet? He's saying it sarcastically, but soon they both start in a kind of choir. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And then, oh, my feet are hurting, my hat is itching, I'm warm, I'm cold. Are we there yet? And on it goes. This kind of complaining, oh, and resistance. Enormous amount of resistance. I sometimes have the feeling that I'm dragging two human-sized lead balls behind me that have this little speakers that said, are we there yet? So what I know, and my children haven't learned it yet, it takes some time, is that first comes the enthusiasm, then the It's hard. I also think it's hard. The thought crosses my mind, it's like, why was this a good idea? Walking uphill is hard. And so we walk one step at a time, and then at some point, even the moaning starts to sort of, it just loses steam. It gets too hard, all that complaining. You have to just focus on walking and being present in the walking, especially as the path kind of narrows and you go uphill. And what I know, that at some point, almost invisibly, silently, the complaining goes silent, and then there's just the sound of the boots on the snow, some birds, the wind, and it all goes quiet, and then we're all kind of taken by the mountain. And it's still hard, but it's more fun, it's more open, and presence starts to build, and we're just there. We're just there, walking, and we're enjoying the beauty, and it's kind of okay that it's a little bit hard, and we can pace it. Actually, when we walk this time, it would be sort of a nice ending to the story that we went up to the peak and it was wonderful. But we didn't go to the top because in the end it was too icy and too much snow and we didn't have harnesses and the sort of safety gear we needed. So we had to stop below. But in a way it didn't matter. At that point, it was so satisfying just having done it. Been there and shared it. So, we went almost to the top and then we walked down. And then as we came down, it was starting to get dark. And when we started to reach the flatland, my mind started to go to, oh, what kind of good things could we cook? Could eat something nice. What should we do when we go back? My mind started to wander. So, no more climbing, no more need to be fully attentive and take care of everyone. And I think it took me about a minute of not being mindful, of losing my awareness, getting lost in the stories of the mind, planning and dreaming about something not yet there. And I tripped on a stone and twisted my ankle, and I couldn't even walk the last bit going back. It's something we often overlook, the protection in awareness, that it actually holds us. Not only does it make our experience meaningful and gives us a sense of felt substance, it actually holds us. When you're stressed and things are busy and you're overwhelmed by life, do you make more mistakes and hurt yourself more? Lose keys and that stuff. Yeah, has happened once or twice, maybe. Yeah. But awareness isn't exactly control. You know, that kind of, oh, I have to make sure I have everything. It's not exactly that. So retreats are a little bit like going up a mountain. It does take some effort, but not in the way we think, and we can't quite sure know for sure how it will be. Sometimes walking up a mountain is really easy, and other times when I thought I'm in good shape, and it's really hard. It's not exactly logical, so we can't use our experience as something to as a kind of benchmark to compare ourselves. How good is it going? Oh, I had a moment of stillness. Things are going really fine. I'm nearly enlightened. This is Buddha nature around the corner. And if lots of thoughts and restless, oh, I'm so bad. I should be ashamed. I should go home. I'm useless. We can't compare that way. We have to do the step by step. And actually, if we really allow it to sort of boil down to just the most simple perspective, The practice of awareness is a little bit like doing push-ups or sit-ups. We repeat by returning when we're lost, lost in thoughts, images, dreams, fantasies. We come back. So we all know that doing one push-up doesn't build any muscles, right? You need to do several over time. And then maybe one day you think, oh, well, not on me, but you can see, all right, yeah, I have some strength. But because it's subtle, and when we're caught up in the structures of our mind and the accumulation of past and history that's in us as thought patterns, but also as structures in our body, emotional structures, actually as energetic structures, as posture, the way we hold ourselves in life. There's so much of that that we're a little bit caught, we're a little bit imprisoned in ourselves, in our own concepts and stories. And so to practice something as subtle as presence, it's no wonder that we we lose our enthusiasm and curiosity, we forget. Like, what am I doing here? Seemed like a good idea. Now what? Of course, we also like to stay in the familiar and in the known. All of us, we're creatures of habit. We like to eat what we like to eat, and we like to do the things we like to do. In a way, nothing wrong with that, but to open our perspective, sometimes we need a little bit of kind deprivation. Not to live up to some kind of strict, boring, serious ideal of how one should live. But because actually it's good for us when we simplify things. So the urge is there, it's like, what's going on with the quarterfinals? What's going to happen? Who is going to do what? What is it? Netherlands and Argentina and Germany and Brazil, and how will it go, and I really want to know, and how can I find out? Yeah, it's fun, but why do you really want to know? We do a lot of those things. And it's good to have a little bit like a lightness, a little bit of humor when we look at ourselves and our own predicament. How confused we get, how caught we get, how lost we get in our stories about ourselves, who I am. I'm great, I'm terrible. Often we're on the terrible side, right? We're so busy blaming ourselves, putting pressure and being hard on ourselves. I should be able to do more. I should be more clear. I should have more awareness. But that's not how we become more aware, right? By pressuring ourselves. Rumi, the Sufi poet, he says, beyond the ideas of right doing and wrong doing, there is a field. And he says to himself, I'll meet you there. So beyond our ideas, our concepts, and our history, can we meet ourselves? In this field of awareness, where just about any experience can arise, and we can be there for it. One of the most transformative experiences there are is to simply pause instead of filling up the experience with something, filling up the space. We're so fast in filling it up. To pause and not fill it up. Even when we don't know, even when we're afraid that it's going to go bad or boring. We're so scared of being bored. Can we pause and wait? It's like learning how to really listen. You know, when you speak to somebody and you're kind of rehearsing how you're going to respond, what you're going to say, and it kind of comes. And those, perhaps those rare moments when we really just listen to another person. And you know how good that feels when somebody's just listening to you? Did you meet somebody that was just present with you? That's wonderful. That's absolutely wonderful. It's like balm for one's being. It's like nourishment. We like presence. Feels good to us. So if it feels good to us, and if it is good for us because it widens us, it opens us, why don't we do it more? Well, the catch is that when we practice presence, when we become more embodied in our heart, in our bellies, in our bodies, whatever has been accumulated also starts to come up, almost as if it wants to be released. We want the 10,000 joys and pleasures, but part of the deal is also the 10,000 sorrows. So at the heart of the Buddha's teaching, in a way the only thing he taught, is the nature of that which is hard for us to bear, that which is hard to tolerate, dukkha, suffering. We sometimes take it so personal, as if it's our fault, or as if it's something inherently wrong, that things are difficult, but they are. It's the most fundamental truth. If we practice awareness, this is what we come up against. It's hard. It's difficult. Not only, but it is. For all human beings, when we grow up, we have a kind of window of tolerance where we can stay open. You know how little beings are when they're born. Did you hold a little baby, or a puppy for that matter, in your arms? They're just like liquid balls, liquid pools of presence. This openness and radiance. Have you felt that with a baby? Seen a baby sometime when they're really small? And we all have this window of tolerance, and it's part of the human deal that even when life is good and perfect and the parents are balanced and perfectly attuned, even so, too much happened to us. Too much stimulation, too much information, too many relational challenges. So we can't digest it all. We can't process it. It's impossible. We can't take it in and digest experience. We get overwhelmed, so what do? It's a good thing as a child. We start to shut down and split things off and compartmentalize. We just close things down because we have to. We just have to. It's a very good survival tool. Then we practice it more, and then we practice it more. And for many of us, life has been so challenging in parts that we just had to narrow things down very, very clearly in a very small way, just to be able to navigate and grow up without losing one's mind, to stay safe. So then as adults, and we begin to practice awareness, actually there is a movement to expand again, to open this window of presence. But it's a little bit challenging for us because we don't know if we will be overwhelmed again. We don't know how much we can tolerate. That's why this is a gradual practice. It's a gradual kind of easing into presence and openness. Just like moving slowly into the lake. Sometimes we can just jump in, and other times we just have to go sort of really slow. Take it really slow. It's better for us. So awareness is natural for us. It's a completely natural thing. When we stroke the fur of a puppy, or we touch the skin of a loved one, it's natural for us to be there, contactful, intimate, close to being, open, aware. It's easy to be present with that which is pleasurable. Of course, mountain tops, sunsets, satisfying conversations, exciting football games, what is there? When it's difficult, painful, what do? We pull back, push away, close down. We create distance. It's our most basic instinct. Kind of brace ourselves. So the invitation in practice is to stay. And when we understand that it makes sense to stay with the difficult, not in this sort of, I'm going to endure it, bring it on, I'm not going to move until the bell rings, and I'll just... Not like that, but really, like, okay, let me feel it, and it is breaking my heart. Luckily, our heart can tolerate breaking. It really can. But it's still a heartbreak. Sometimes it can be heartbreaking to have a tension in the neck in meditation. Sometimes we're heartbroken because the loss is so big in our life. But when we dare to come close to that, we transform as beings. And this is when we become like a mountain in our own life. And this is how we end fear. And it's also how we end the self-caused suffering, where we struggle so much with ourselves and with life, where we're pushed and pulled, where we create all these stories. We relax more. Sometimes, in moments of crisis, when things are so intense that it just blows away all our concepts, people often report, not always, but people often report that then they become fully present. You may have had that experience yourself. May have been an accident or something extremely challenging that happened to you. And then we're just there. But so much of our life is not this push and pull between the exquisite beauty of life and the terrible sorrow and challenge. It's that kind of neutral sort of flatland, right? Like it's neither. You're waiting at the bus stop, you're paying your bills, football game is, it's not really pulling you in. Meditation is a lot like that. Oh, the walking meditation. To make oneself attuned to the neutral tone to in a way value it, it's like a hidden jewel. It's underappreciated, especially in our time, because we're so habituated to high intensity stimulation and to be effective. So a person has high status, it seems, if we're busy, right? It's like busy with all that we do, phone calls, multitasking. To attune ourselves to come close to the neutral tone, it's a precious doorway, because it's the doorway to that which is eventless, still, calm. But when we overlook the neutral, and we're kind of on the way to the next thing, it's like, oh, it's neutral, what can I do to make it better, more exciting, what can I grab on to? When we abandon the neutral, when we're not appreciating it, it turns negative. It turns unpleasant. But neutral is just neutral. Can our heart stay open with the neutral, intimate? We tend to lose interest very fast. So in practice, we're invited to open our field of awareness to include pleasurable experiences, the unpleasurable ones, challenging ones, and the neutral. All of it. Real presence slips past our demand for spectacle. It slips past our despair. Not just like a child, sometimes it is a child. She walks down the blistered steps to where you kneel and says the simplest things. She's entertained by butterflies. She does not seem to care that you're ruined, you're lost. She does not even seem to notice. Find an earthworm in the neglected soil, and she will make you feel for a moment that your life has not been wasted. Name a flower, and she will make you feel that you have learned to speak for the first time. The more we relax into our inherent capacity for presence, the more we practice that, the more we orient our heart and mind to that, the more we come to appreciate the subtlety and the particular in life. The things are just so. This evening like this will never come again. We begin to notice the nuances in life, and then that which is pleasurable becomes more saturated, more colorful. It becomes, have you ever done that with watercolor? So it can be diluted with water, or you can put in a lot of pigment. When we're really present, pleasure becomes saturated with pigment. We can really taste the food. And we can really feel what it's like to swim. We can really feel the preciousness of breathing. Not just when it's our last breath and we're not quite ready to let go of it. So pleasure becomes more intensified. And awareness creates space around the difficult. It creates space. It opens it. It seems truth matters so much. To be willing to be truthful is awareness supports that, and awareness is supported by truth. So when we're entangled, we're entangled, and when we're confused, we're confused, and when we're hurting, we're hurting. In a way, it's simple. Just like there is a caterpillar, or today it's cloudy. It is simple. We feel what we feel, and if we're lost in thought, we're lost in thought, and then we come back. We don't need to beat ourselves up about it. But we make it complicated, right? We make it very complicated for ourselves. Why is it that we always think that we need to be a sort of upgraded version of ourselves? Like Leela 2.5. Why do we need to be... It's very different to aspire to goodness, to aspire to be alive and full and real in life, and to have this inner pressure that comes from self-judgment and demand. This is, should be better, better meditator, more awakened, definitely not enough awakened. A lot of unnecessary pressure, and then we just get lost, we're in that little prison again. So we kind of have to unlearn. It's good not to know. So if you have these sort of moments or stretches, like I don't really know what's going on. Sometimes we can have this feeling about ourselves. Can't quite know, can't locate ourselves, place ourselves on the map. Meditation does that to us. It becomes harder to hold up the CV, to make the personality presentation, I'm such and such person. Because it becomes more loose. It's not so fixed anymore. And that's a good thing. And when we really widen our perspective, when we really quiet down, and we're not so preoccupied with the immediacy of our storyline and my responsibilities and the things I have to do and the things I have to get and what I have to become, we can really be impacted and touched by how little we know. I mean, really, what do we know? If we really study our bodies, the earth for that matter, our bodies are the product, and I mean that in a very concrete, scientific way, of colliding stars. We're actually made up of, this sounds very much like New Age, but of stardust. We're actually the stuff from colliding stars once upon a time. That's how it happened. And in this strange world of atoms, you know, you start to look at things more and more closely, you penetrate deeper and deeper, there's more and more space around everything, right? That's the truth of atoms. It's more and more space. And then it's not even stuff. It becomes kind of light, right? In a way, everything is a kind of solidified light. It's like, how can the mind wrap itself around that? It can. Doesn't need to. I was reading some scientific text the other day, and I was reading about this new thing that they're identifying called quantum foam. I mean, I really didn't understand, but just the word quantum foam is like, what's that? What's that going on in this universe? And we don't need to look at this, you know, enormous picture, but we can actually feel it a little bit, like we're on this little round thing in the middle of nothing. We don't know if we're up or down. I mean, we think we're up, but you know, we're actually just spinning. And there is a bit of this thing called gravity that's also quite mysterious, that sort of holds us here, not just sort of and all these strange beings here. You know about butterflies, caterpillars, these little juicy fat creatures. They gorge themselves on green leaves. They just eat and eat and eat and eat and eat. And I don't know exactly how they do it, but I assume that they try to stay away from blunt beaks so they don't become food. And then at some point, they hang themselves upside down, and from themselves, they start to wrap themselves up in a cocoon until they disappear inside this sheltered form. And then what do? They dissolve themselves into a translucent caterpillar soup. Like literally, they just dissolve. They become nothing. And then they kind of reassemble themselves, crack open the thing, and out comes this butterfly that's a little bit moist and needs to sort of, oh yeah, I got wings. Now what? What a place we live in. And what do we know about ourselves and what we're capable of? Even though we're the fruit and the product of our history, and it was hard and it has had a huge impact for each person alive, there is a bigger picture. So actually, the most basic function of our personality, our historic self, it's all the accumulated historic experiences that we've had that have structured us, is to reduce awareness. That's the function of personality, is to close this window of tolerance, to keep it small and in control. That's what it does. So the ego is a contraction. It's a contraction. We don't need to fight the ego. We all need a sense of self. We all need it. It's perfectly normal. It's supposed to happen. We're supposed to do this contraction. And then, to awaken, we have to turn and be willing to come into touch with that. So awareness brings the possibility of seeing the truth, of widening our perspective. And it doesn't need to be motivated. It's there. It's as natural as daylight. We just need to make this turn. We don't need to make so much effort. Sometimes we need that little effort. So my approach with my children, when they're like, oh, it's too hard, I vary it a bit, but basically, I kind of say, yeah, I know it's hard, but let's just take one more step. Just hang in there. So we sit, we kind of do the same thing. Yeah, it sucks. Let's just hang in there. Let's see what supports me to be present now. We don't go in so many stories. It's not needed. You know, we're always aware of something. And the more we relax and quiet down, and the more we stay in the present moment, the more we abide in the here-ness and now-ness, the more we begin to shift our weight, not so much to the stories and the preoccupations with that contracted sense of being, we begin to shift our weight to ease ourselves into awareness itself. We start to feel ourselves in a more open way. So we can be aware of, are we interested in the truth? the truth of the moment. I'm not speaking about some kind of big metaphysical truth, some big spiritual Buddhist truth. Are we interested in the truth of the moment, our own personal truth? Or are we more preoccupied with achieving something, becoming somebody, to upgrade ourselves? When we're interested in truth, we support awareness. So this word awakening, it kind of pops up here and there, right? And we can have lots of ideas. But let's talk about it as an experience. In a psychological sense, sometimes when we're being caught up in the tightness of ourselves and we shift perspective, it can be like we wake up from sleep, from insanity or imprisonment, and it's like, Have you ever had that, if you have a problem in life and you try to figure it out and it seems hopeless and you cannot find a way, and then you just drop it for a while and say, I give up. The giving up is a good thing. Like, I give up. I go for a walk, I take a break, and then it's like, I can do it in this way. And you just have a different perspective. Did you have that experience sometime? It is wider perspective, and then things seem to fall into place. And the beauty in that is that even painful truths can be deeply satisfactory. Even when we see things that are painful and we understand things about ourselves, when we become aware of something and we see it clearly and truthfully and it resonates in our heart, it feels good. I actually never shared that before, but it comes to my mind, so why not talk about it? I was married for 15 years, and one day, after some reflection, I had a good relationship, but the understanding came up that actually the relationship should end. And I talked to my partner, we talked together, and we just saw this truth so clearly, both of us. Just saw it so clearly, it completely shifted our entire life, and we separated, we divorced. And it was a beautiful experience, but also a heartbreaking one, because we loved each other. But it wasn't appropriate to continue. We had been together for a long time. And the willingness we actually both had to be with each other, and this understanding in an open way, made it deeply satisfying. In a way, one of the more beautiful experiences I had, even though it was an ending. And no one wants to get divorced. Awareness can hold the hardest things in our life gracefully. And the more we value that and turn to that, it changes our life. Another aspect of awakening is, well, I guess the technical word is the phenomenological experience of awakening, the feeling of awakening. The feeling of awakening is when we brighten, when we have a sense of lighting up inside. I see. Sometimes we see one particular area of our life, and sometimes it's very fundamental, it's completely fundamental. Like, really, we just see the most fundamental truth about life, the nature of things. In that way, it's very simple. It's our birthright. And it seems like some of us have this homing instinct, this spark of awakening. We want many things in life, but to see clearly and open our life. You know, there will never be a perfect moment for that. It's not like life just stops and everyone around you and your whole family just sort of comes together and says, yes, I'll support you and you can just look into the nature of things, please. I don't know, maybe it happens for some people. It never happened to me, ever. So we have to do it anyway, in the midst of it all. In the midst of all of it. And so our experiences are not in the way, they're the gateways. Actually, they're the gateways. So we can practice awareness until we become awareness itself. And then we can live in a way where we know our Buddha nature and we also know our social security number. I mean, we really need them in Sweden. I think you need them here too, right? What can you do? You need both. You need to be practical, functional, and know the truth of your being. Rumi said, silence is the language of God. Everything else is a poor translation. And it's true that the most tender and intimate knowing inside us is a little bit hard to articulate at times. But we can have fun trying. And so part of what we do on a retreat, we practice silence, but we also meet together and share. Because to speak about and share about this, the practice of awakening, the deepening of presence, supports it, makes it more real for us. Meditation master Ajahn Chah, this is a well-known and well-loved quote, I love it too. He said, try to be mindful and let things take their natural course. Then your mind will be still in any surroundings, like a clear forest lake. All kinds of wonderful, rare creatures will come to drink at the lake, and you will clearly see the nature of all things. You'll see many strange and wonderful things come and go, but you will be still. And this is the happiness of a Buddha. So however your day has been, 10,000 joys, 10,000 sorrows, or 10,000 neutral moments, or a whole mix of it, don't take that as a measure of how it's going. Just keep on practicing. May all beings wake up to the truth of their nature. May all beings be safe and free from harm. May all beings live with ease and well-being.